thank you all for coming again. Okay, so last week we started this at GetQuickBooks.com, and just to provide a quick summary to get some context, we saw that the psukim speak about it in a number of places, and the psukim seem to point in somewhat different directions. One place it's mentioned in the context of arayos, of the illicit relationships. There it says, "Don't do these things because they're an abomination." Second place it appears is also in the context of arayos. It says, "Don't do these things so that you guys could become kadosh." And third place is in the context of avodah zarah. So the context is always somewhat bad, but the purposes the Torah gives are somewhat different. In terms of the midrashim that we saw, we seem to be able to track a range of different opinions as to the nature or the scope of the Isser. According to some opinions in the Medrash, anything non-Jews did, at least one possibility in the Medrash, is that anything non-Jews did, unless it's something that's essential, constructive, or necessary, is going to be Isser. From there, we can move on to cultural things, theater or circuses. From there, we could limit it even more to immoral things, homosexual marriages and things of that sort. And then we can move it on even more. We can limit it even more and limit it to only superstitious, avodah zarah oriented things. So those are more or less the different degrations we had in the midrashim. So today we're going to see the two major gemaras of Akukos Hakom, see how they fit in, and see the basic interpretations of the Rishonim. Great. So the first sugya is the sugya in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Beis. It's the first little bit of gemara after the sources. So I'm sorry, but it's a bit hard to read. I guess I'll start off. The Mishnah starts off talking about mitzvahs ha-neragin. So sometimes their capital punishment is in order. The Mishnah will say that there are four types of capital punishment in the Torah. One of them is decapitation, is chopping off the head. So this Mishnah describes how the process of decapitation. Great. So the Mishnah says, Hayomatizin is rosho pesayif giderek shay malchus osa. What's the method of decapitation? It's very simple. You chop off the person's head with a sword, just as the Roman government does. Unfortunately, apparently, you didn't have to describe how the Roman government chopped off people's heads, because it was done frequently enough in public squares, so everybody knew. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Nivah Hulzeh. Rabbi Yehuda says, that's disgusting. Rather, what should he do? Elo manikin es rosho al hasazen. You put his head on a wooden block, the kotzeitz bekofetz. And you hack at it with a hatchet. Great. So Amr, though, ain misa minuvelas miso. I mean, that's much worse. It's much cleaner to chop off the head in a one-time thrust with a sword than hack away with something that's more blunt, something that's more of a hatchet. Great. So in the Mishnah, it's fairly simple. We have the Chachamim who say, you chop off the guy's head with a sword. Rabbi Yehuda says that that's disgusting, rather do it with a hatchet. So the Gemara sort of turns around the issue at hand. Tanya. Amar tan Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda, who says you should use a hatchet, responded as follows. Afani yodea shemisem nevelosi. I also know that knocking off somebody's head with a hatchet is disgusting. Avol ma'asa, but what could I do? Shari amar Torah, v'kukosem lo silichu. The Torah said, v'kukosem lo silichu. Decapitation with a sword is the way the Roman government does it. So, as Aser, it's a violation of Kukosem lo sileku to decapitate somebody who is chayav misa with a sword. Therefore, I'm forced to do it with a hatchet, even though it's disgusting. So then the question is, well, so what do the rabbanim say? How do they respond to the rabbi's claim that it's a violation of Kukos Hakom? For rabbanan, kevin teksiv sayif be'oraisa lo minaya kukar minan. Since it says kill people with a sword in the Torah, lo minayu kagarminon, we didn't learn it from them. Meaning there's some biblical source for using the sword, and therefore we didn't learn it from the non-Jews, from the Roman government, and therefore it's not a violation of Kukos Hakom. Great. And how do the Chachamim know this? How do they know that if something is written in the Torah, it's not a violation of Kukos Hakom? For Rabban. The evil team, Ahi. If you don't say that, Hadatanya Sorfin al Malachim, Blomi Dark Yamuri, Hiki Sarfinan, Sikotza Tosefta. The Tosefta says that there used to be a custom in the good old days that when a non-Jewish king died, they would burn his household items together with the burial service. Now it's the custom of non-Jewish kings. The Tosefta says that Jewish kings could do the same thing. When a Jewish king dies, you're allowed to burn his household items the same way the non-Jews do. And it's not considered Darki Yamori, it's not considered a violation of Kukos Nakam or superstition or anything of that sort. The Gemara asks, so why is it not a violation of Kukos Nakam? It says because we have a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Mr. Vosav Osapa, we go there. That when Yirmiyahu was prophesying to Tzidkiyahu, the last king, he tells him that your kingdom is going to be conquered by Bavel, you're going to go into exile, but don't worry, at the end of your life, things are going to turn around, there's going to be more of a positive spin, and you're going to get the burning. The same way your parents had their household items burnt, it's going to, the same phenomenon is going to happen to you. And that's supposed to be comforting. It means that people are going to be treating him once again as a king. So the Gemara says, the only reason it was mutter is because it was written in the Torah. It says to Mr. Fosap Osaka, it's mentioned in the Navi as a practice of Jewish kings. So the Chavim say, you see from there, anything that's mentioned in the Torah is not a violation of Kukos Nakam. And that's more or less what we have in this Gemara. So I'll just summarize the points again. We have Machlokes Rav Yehuda Nachamim about the method of decapitation. Nachamim said use a sword. Rav Yehuda says that's a violation of Kukos Nakam. The Chachamim say it's not Kukos Nakam because it's written in the Torah. Good. So that's the basic structure of the Gemara. So, methodologically speaking, if you wanted to analyze this Gemara and glean from it the definition of Kukos Nakam, you're going to have to ask yourself the following questions. Number one, what type of thing are we talking about here? What type of practice that we're taking from the non-Jewish government, at least theoretically? Is there anything cultural, pagan, immoral with it? It doesn't seem like it. It seems like it's the most logical method of decapitation. Take a sword, chop off the person's head, and one clean swoop. And still, Rabbi Yehuda assumes that's a violation of Kukos Nakam. And also, the Chachamim seem to agree with him in theory. The Chachamim seem to assume that really, you're right, really this should be a violation of Kukos Nakam. But we have a biblical source for it. It's written in the Torah, and therefore it's okay. What theoretically could the Chachamim have responded? What would you have said if somebody said this was Kukos Nakam? It's not a circus. It's not cultural. It's not religious. It's not immoral. This is just something that the Roman government happens to do. So based on the majority of opinions we saw in the Midrashim last week, this wouldn't be a violation of Kukos Nakam whatsoever. But still, this Gemara seems to be pointing in the one extreme direction. The extreme direction that anything the non-Jews do, unless it's constructive, unless it's necessary, unless it's like building buildings or planting trees, is going to be aser. If you recall from last week, we had the last measures we saw, that if they go out in a purple, that somebody says, just like the non-Jews go out in a purple, I'm going to go out in a purple. Just like they go out with traveler's boxes, I'm going to go out with a traveler's box. Things that just seem like random things. That's also a violation of Kukos Nakam. So that seems to be what the Gemara is pointing at.
Yeah, Laura. Why is it misconstructive? It's a better method of execution.
You're saying it should be constructive. So you're saying you should limit it even more. It's not something that's constructive, it's mutter. Everything is usar unless it's necessary or part of the way of the world, building buildings, planting trees. You might make that argument. You could say that it's not constructive, it's just a less disgusting way. Is removing disgustingness a constructive act? So, I guess it depends on your take on things. Yeah, Michael?
I don't understand why we would learn from this Gemara the idea that if there's a certain cultural feature of non-Jews that we would take that as something as usher. Because what we saw in the Midrashim a couple times last week was that the concept of chukah was really important. That's something that's on the books, something that's kind of legislated, and this would be since it's a function of the government.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. You're saying that I conflated two different categories, and really you should split between them. That's a good point. I did not realize that. I conflated something that doesn't have any negative connotations and cultural phenomenon. What Michael's pointing out is that you could be machalik. and say this Gemara only prohibits neutral actions of non-Jews because they're official government legislations.
Yeah. I mean, and that seems to be what Rabbi Yehuda is really upset about.
Like, it's something the Malkus does. And then you would have to assume that there's an equivalent legislation for the burning of the king's household items, which presumably there was. There was sometimes some type of law that you should always burn the king's household items after he dies. Okay, that's definitely another way to limit the Gemara. Okay, great. So that's one Gemara. The next Gemara is a very similar Gemara, but somewhat different. That's why it's interesting. So the mission, we start off with the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah. I apologize that I left the last Gemara off the sheet. So the Mishnah is there, but the Gemara is not. So here's the Gemara. So the Mishnah is on Avodah Zarah Chukasim and Aleph. It's the last thing on the Makor sheets. So I apologize for not giving the background to this Mishnah. The first Mishnah in Avodah Zarah says that 3 days prior and 3 days subsequent to non-Jewish religious holidays, you shouldn't do business with non-Jews. You shouldn't enter business dealings 3 days before and 3 days after pagan holidays. So the Gemara says, because if you strike a deal that's mutually beneficial, the non-Jew is probably going to praise his God because it's that time of year. It's a religious time of year. And you don't want him to praise his Avodah Zarah. And since if you struck a good deal, he's going to praise his Avodah Zarah, and that's what everybody's going for, you should avoid business deals for that week. Practically speaking, we don't do this, at least for the non-Jewish religions that we have around nowadays. It's been pointed out by numerous people. If you read through Masechta Avodah Zarah just with the Gemara, and you read through with Tosfos living in Christian Europe, you get two completely different sets of dinim. Meaning the Baalei Tosfos greatly limited these dinim, basically under the assumption that Christians aren't considered Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Christians are not considered pagans, and therefore a lot of these dinim don't apply. And that's more or less what's followed. If you were living in like Buddhist India or something of that sort, so your questions might be much more serious. Great. So the next Mishnah lists these Eidayin. It lists some of these pagan holidays for which you can't do business the week of. So I'm not exactly sure what these words mean. I think these are the correct translations. Klanda is the Roman New Year. Saturnura is the Roman Rosh Chodesh. Kartisim is the day of a Roman victory, like an anniversary of a victory. Yom Genusia Shamachayim is like the coronation day. It's the day that the king was coronated. V'yom Haleda, V'yom HaMisa. And the birthday of the current king, and the death day, anniversary of the death of the previous king. Death day is a quote from Harry Potter, too. So Divrei Rabbi Meir. So that's what Rabbi Meir says. Those are the days which you should not do business 3 days before or 3 days afterwards. The Chachamim say, they argue on the last point. Kol Misa Sheishba Sreifa, Yishba Avodas Chachamim. That not every anniversary of the previous king's death is considered a pagan holiday. It's only considered a pagan holiday if they burnt the guy's stuff. If they burnt his household items when he died. She'in ba sreifa, but if they didn't burn the household items of the king when he died, in ba avodas kochavim. So there's no pagan rituals or pagan rites associated with it, and therefore it's not going to be prohibited as a non-Jewish pagan holiday. So we're going to focus on this last little bit, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So Rabbi Meir says, no matter what happens, no matter how the funeral service went, the anniversary of the death of the previous king is considered a Yom Eid, considered a pagan holiday. And the Chachamim say, no, only if they perform this rite, only if they burnt the household items when they buried him. Then it's considered a pagan holiday. Okay. So let's skip to the Gemara. So the Gemara is on Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're going to start from the two dots by the third wide line. Yom HaLida v'Yom HaMisa. Okay. So the Gemara, it's only a couple lines of Gemara, but they're interesting. So the Chalal, the Gemara says, we see from here, Rabbi Meir Savar, Lo Shna Misa Sheyesh Basreifa, V'Lo Shna Misa She'in Basreifa, Palki Ba'al HaVodos Bokavim. Fine. Again, Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah said, no matter what happens, no matter if they performed this rite, they didn't perform this rite, the anniversary of the previous king's death is always a pagan holiday. So he's the Rav Meir, so the Gemara says, we see from there, Rav Meir assumes, it doesn't matter whether or not they performed this rite, they always worship on that day. So Alma, Srifa Lav Chukahi. We see that this burning of the household items is not considered a chuk. We'll leave that word undefined for the moment. Michlal, the Rabbanan Savri, Srifa Chukahi. So the Rabbanan who limit the pagan holiday thing to anniversary of king's death where they did perform this rite, you see that the burning is considered a chuk. So the Gemara asks, but how can you say it's considered a chuk? But Tanya, we have a Tosefta that says you're allowed to do this rite for Jewish kings. But Tanya, Sorfin alam alakim, filome darki amari. It's not considered darki amari. It's not considered superstitious. It's not considered chukos hakam if you do this for not for a Jewish king. V'chukahi anan heki sarfinan. If the pagan rites are only associated with the anniversary of a king if they burnt his stuff. So you see, burning is non-Jewish pagan ritual thing. And therefore, why is it mutter for Jewish kings to do it? Great. So what does the Gemara answer? Ela dekuli alma sriyefa lav kukahi. Really, nobody thinks that burning is considered a real law. It's considered a real chok. Ela chashivusahi. Rather, they don't do it because it's a chok. They don't do it because, seemingly in the context, because it's a pagan ritual type of thing. They do it because it's chashivas. Whereas it shows importance. It shows honor to the king that if he did it. He was such an important person, and nobody should be able to use his stuff after he dies. And that's why they burnt his things. And that's why they burn the king's things, not because of pagan rituals, but because to show honor for this king. And then the machlokas is whether or not a king who they don't show this honor to was worthy enough in their eyes for them to create a holiday on the anniversary of his death. Great. But the last part is not as important for us. What we're going to focus on are those lines of the Gemara. What the Gemara says, the Gemara asked, why is it mutter for Jewish kings to have their stuff burnt after they die? The Gemara answers, it's mutter because it's not a chok. It's not a rule, a law, legislation, a pagan rite, or something of that sort. Rather, chashivusahi, it's a way of showing honor and kavod for a king that nobody else should use his stuff after he dies. Great. Yeah, David?
Isn't that kind of like saying that the pagan ritual has a reason? In other words, you could say pagans have this ritual. When their king passed away, they destroy his stuff. So the Gemara seems to be saying, well, there's some meaning behind this ritual, which is that they want to show honor. It's still a pagan ritual, meaning if you take that to the logical conclusion, this is only going to apply when you have pagan rituals that are completely arbitrary.
Right. So I think the way you're understanding the Gemara is that the Gemara is not challenging the fact that it's a pagan ritual, that it has to do with Avodah Zarah. The Gemara is just saying it has to do with Avodah Zarah, but there's also a good reason for it. And that's what started it. That's what started off as worship. You could read the Gemara that we just misunderstood non-Jewish customs. There's nothing to do with religion. Even a secular non-Jewish king at the time, but there were no such things, would have burnt his stuff. The Haraya, even Jewish kings burnt their stuff. We see it's only because of Chashivusa, it's only a way of showing honor and kavod for the king. And that the two ways of reading the Gemara are going to become important. Great. So, just to set up the two Gemaras again. So the first Gemara, the Gemara Sanhedrin, sounded like even completely secular things, maybe only if they're legislated, are considered chukos hakam. So if that's true, why is the mutter for Jewish kings to burn their stuff, according to the Gemara Sanhedrin? What's the hat there? The Gemara says, because it's written in the Torah. We have a pasuk that mentions such a phenomenon by Jewish kings, a prophecy. According to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, we're dealing with the same exact brisa, the same exact custom of Jewish kings burning their stuff after they die. And why is it mutter? What does the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, our second Gemara, say?
Because it's a good thing.
Right, because it's Mishim Chashivusa. They're doing it for a positive reason. They're doing it to show honor to their king. It's something that's logical. So if you take each Gemara and work through what the inference would be in terms of the definition of Chukos Hakam, you're going to get two different definitions. According to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, if you just read it straight, it sounds like anything that has any sort of logic behind it is going to be mutter. Anything that's done mishum chashivusa is going to be okay. Possibly. If you read the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the first Gemara we saw, there, we're taking something that's not pagan, taking something that seems to be logical, doesn't seem to be immoral or negative in any sort of way. And the only reason why it's mutter is because we find the biblical source, because it's written in the Torah. So according to the Gemara Sanhedrin, it sounds like if you have a parallel phenomenon, you'd have a completely secular, neutral, non-Jewish law. It would only be mutter for Jews to follow if we found some source in the Torah. Because then, lav minayel kagarmina, we didn't learn it from them, we got it from the Torah. So the two Gemaras would seemingly give you two different definitions or scopes as to what falls under the violation of Chukos Hakam, and there are going to be major gaps. Again, according to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it sounds like it's mutter if there's hashivusa, if there's some type of logic behind it. According to the Gemara Sanhedrin, it sounds like the only reason it's mutter ever is if there's some biblical source. And then the definition of Chukos Hakam is going to be much more expansive. Anything is going to be asur unless we find some sort of source for it. Possibly, maybe only like legislative things. Yeah, Michael.
Can I ask a question about the Gemara and what is it?
You definitely could. It's a bit unclear. I fudged over some things. Yeah.
So, in that first line, Nechlal de Rabbi Meir Savar. So the Gemara establishes that to start off with, the Rebbe Meir thinks that whether there's strafe or whether there's not strafe, they worship Avodah Zarah in either case.
Right.
And then it infers from there that strafe is not a chok. And you left chok undefined, which is fine. But suppose that what's meant there is, you know, strafe is not an idolatrous practice.
Right.
Okay. In that case, you get this reading. There's Avodah Zarah worshipped at every funeral, whether there's strafe or not. And we can infer from there that strafe is not an idolatrous practice. But that doesn't make a ton of sense, though, because it could just be that Rabbi Meir asserted it because of whatever Avodah Zarah they were worshipping, besides for strafe. And he says strafe doesn't matter because they're already worshipping Avodah Zarah, it's asur anyway.
Right. I definitely hear you. I was wondering the same thing. I don't think it affects the actual definition of Chukos Hakam.
Well, no, because the inference, well, I think it does, because it means that anything that would just be a sign of Avodah Zarah is not enough. It has to be, meaning, it can't just be that strafa is also bad. It has to be that it's not bad unless there's strafa. In order for the Gemara's inference to make sense, it has to be that strafa is a necessary condition for Avodah Zarah.
Meaning that they would only, we can only define it as a Yom Palchi of Avodah Zarah, a day of worshipping for Avodah Zarah, if there was strafa there.
From the fact that Rabbi Meir doesn't make a contingent on that, it means that he doesn't think that strafa is a necessary condition like that.
Right.
But that what you get from there is that the only things that are usher are things that are necessary conditions.
Oh, not just stam a pagan rite, something that's necessary for the worship to actually go on.
I don't know how else to move that line.
I hear that. I was wondering the same thing, that the Gemara's inference doesn't exactly flow. But you're saying you could limit it, according to Rabbi Meir, you could limit it even more. It sounds like only things that are completely necessary for pagan rites to actually follow, not anything associated with
it. It's not just Rabbi Meir, it's the way the Gemara is using the word chuk.
Right.
Chuk.
I hear that. But what I meant when I said that it may not be so relevant in the end of the day, is that because the Gemara ends up retracting and says, lav kukahi. Whatever the word chuk was, seemingly you're right that it's something associated with Avodah Zarah. We just misunderstood what strafa was about. It sounds like the Gemara is admitting that they didn't have a full grasp over the source of strafa,
True, and but what we take out of here is the Gemara's definition of what chukah means.
Saying that the...
And whatever chukah is, whatever is bad for chukah has to be, in order for the Gemara's logic to make any sense, has to be something that is a necessary indicator of a
Avodah Zarah. I hear that. And then the Gemara's response is saying that... No, but the Gemara's response is Shem Chashivusa. I think, right. You can take what you're saying and just take it through the Gemara. Then the Gemara says that burning things is a necessary rite for the pagan funeral, so it should be a violation of Hukos Tehen Mosi Lechu. It must be Lav Kuka, he rather it's Kashivusa. I mean, it's not something that's necessary as a pagan rite. Rather, it's just for it's just to show honor to the king. So, but it's still, in the end of the day, we see that it's mutter to follow non-pagan, non-Jewish customs, as long as it's chashivusa, as long as there's some type of logic behind it. That still emerges from the Gemara.
No, what emerges from chashivusa, the only thing that chashivusa adds is that meaning streifa is not relevant for Avodah Zarah at all. It's just they only worship Avodah Zarah at important moments.
Right. So then, still, why is there not a violation of Chukas Nakam?
Because streifa is not an indicator of Avodah Zarah at all.
Right. So you're saying then the reason why it's mutter is not because there's a logic behind it. Anything that's not Avodah Zarah is going to be mutter.
Yeah. Even more, anything that isn't a necessary condition for Avodah Zarah being present.
Right. We're going to get there. It's another way to read the Gemara. We'll get there in a second. But I hear you.
That'd be super limiting.
That would be very limiting in terms of the scope, and we'll get there hopefully. But thank you. But just in terms of the way most Rishonim set up the question, before we get to some Rishonim I think are saying what Michael says, so I have to think it through again, is that just focusing on the lines of why Srefa is mutter. According to Gemara Avodah Zarah, Srefa is mutter because it's Kashivusa, because there's some logic behind it. I mean, that's the most limiting form of that answer. And according to Gemara Sanhedrin, the only reason Srefa is mutter is because it is it's because there's some type of pasuk in the Torah. Otherwise, it's going to be aser. And that's the question. That's the way the Rishonim set up the question. So let's go through some of the Rishonim now, and we'll see how they resolve this issue. Right. So the Gemara Tosfos Masechta Sanhedrin, that's the base. The first source. Elkevin Nixiv Srefa. This is the Gemara Sanhedrin that says, since Srefa is written in the Torah, therefore it's Mutter. Tema, the Mashmaaka, the Afagab de Chukahi, Kevin Nixiv de Urai Sashari. The Parakaman of Sakas of Rezara, Parak was Srefa Chukahi, Haksiv Chukusin Losi Lehu, Mazdik Lab Chukahi. I mean, the two Gemaras don't seem to be talking to each other. Gemara Sanhedrin gives the reason that it's Mutter is because there's some type of biblical source. Gemara Avodah Zarah says it's mutter because it's not a chok, it's just a chashivusa. So here's how Tosfos reads the Gemara. B'yish lomar, the hasam ka'amar lav chukahi the shem avodas kachavim. What the Gemara Avodah Zarah is doing is dealing with something that's Avodah Zarah oriented, something that's pagan oriented. Anything that's pagan oriented is going to be aser. De'i hava chuka the avodas kachavim, afilu hava kasov be'oraisa lo'ava mahani. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah is establishing that it's not part of a pagan rite. Because if it was part of a pagan rite, even if it was written in the Torah, it would still be Aser. So that's the first stage. First thing you have to ask is this pagan? Is this something associated with Avodah Zarah? If it is associated with the Avodah Zarah, it's automatically going to be Aser. If it's not associated with Avodah Zarah, so then that's where the Gemara Sanhedrin comes in. That's where we have to see whether or not it has some type of source. Avohaka, but here in Sanhedrin, are you in the kofim? Shlomo shema v'ros kofim. The mitasayif. The kibbut the ksiv be'oraisa. Lo minayel garminon v'shari. So according to the way Tosfos is setting it up, what we have is that the Gemara of Avodah Zarah and the Gemara of Sanhedrin are dealing with two different levels of the issue. First question you have to ask is this a pagan rite or not? And that's what the Gemara of Avodah Zarah is doing. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, if it's a pagan rite, it's always going to be Asur, even if it's written in the Torah. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah establishes it's not a pagan rite, rather, Mishum Kashivusa. They're doing it for some good reason. What's a good reason? To show honor to their king. Great. So that's what the Gemara in Avodah Zarah does. Gemara Sanhedrin is picking up where the Gemara in Avodah Zarah left off. Once we know it's not a pagan rite, and it's something secular, and it has good logic to it, it should still be Aser because of Kukos Akum. The only reason it's Mutter is because it has some biblical source. So anything that's Avodah Zarah oriented is going to be Aser no matter what, even if you find a pasuk for it. Anything that's not Avodah Zarah oriented is going to be Asur unless we find a biblical source. So at the end of the day, if you think about it, according to Tosfos, you really end up with a very expansive definition of Kukos Akum, because both of these levels are going to be very problematic for us. If it's pagan in origin, it's always Asur, even if you find some type of pasuk that mentions it. If it's not pagan in origin, even if there's a good reason for it, it's Kashivusa, that's where the Gemara Sanhedrin says it's mutter because there's a pasuk. It's mutter because we find a source in our Torah. So what emerges according to Tosfos is that anything secular, anything that's even not Avodah Zarah oriented, even things that have some type of logic to them, even things that are Mishum Kashivusa, are still going to be Asur unless we find a pasuk. That tells us even Jews did it from time immemorial. Hey, Michael.
How are you reading Dumi at the Saif just like in the case of Saif? Or yeah. Are you thinking of that? Okay.
I mean, you're reading it as something legislated. Like.
No, maybe. Dumi at the Saif could also be read as not just as in the case of the Saif, but also similar to Saif. And then it's kind of, that opens, I don't, well, then we'd have to talk about what Saif. Similar to Saif would be.
Right. So,
gross, or assassinations, or
right, you could limit it more. The way the later people understood Tosfos and the parallel Tosfos them, it sounds like anything secular. Yeah. Great. So that is one way to take the Gemara. So say they're talking about different issues. The Gemara and Sanhedrin, the first Gemara is building off the first one. Gemara of Avodah Zarah says it's not pagan. The Gemara and Sanhedrin says even if it's not pagan, it's only mutter because we have a source. Yeah, David.
Is the source just serving a historical function? In other words, the fact that we have a pasuk is just evidence that Jews were doing this before the Akum were doing it? Or is the source, is the pasuk a kind of overriding factor? Because presumably you could have a non-pasuk source. For example, suppose non-Jews, suppose a particular idolatrous group starts eating gefilte fish on Friday night. So could you point to evidence of all our grandmothers that Jews in fact have been doing this long before the idolaters were doing it? Meaning, is the puzzle just an example of that, or is it a kind of elevation of the practice?
So, logically, I think you can go either way. If you go back to the Lashon of the Gemara, it sounds like the first way. It sounds like the Pasuk is just you being used as evidence that we didn't take it from them, we got it from our own sources. Because the Pasuk of the Gemara says, Kibin tiksiv be'oraisa lo minayu kagarminon. We didn't learn it from them because it's written in our Torah. So it sounds like it's more evidence-based. Whether or not other forms of evidence other than psukim would suffice, is a question, I guess, which I guess would be open to, which is a question which I guess would be open for discussion. But yeah. Right, so that's one way to put the two Gemaras together. Another way emerges from the Chiddushei HaRan. If you go to the fourth source, the fourth Rishon that we have here. So he doesn't deal with both Gemaras explicitly, but I think he's putting them together in the end of the day. Again, she's commenting on the Gemara Sanhedrin. It says because something's written in the Torah, therefore it's mutter. It says Rabbanon came into Ksiv Saif Raisa Lav Menel Kagarminan. Since it says swords in the Torah, therefore we didn't take it from them; we got it from our own sources. So Yish Mefarshim. Some people explain this line as follows: Shatam Bazeh Fishat Torah Kadma Lahem. Presumably, Torah is ancient. Whatever is written in the Torah precedes non-Jewish custom. And therefore, that's why it's mutter. Something's written in the Torah, like David's first option, use it as evidence that we got it from ourselves, not from them. He says, "Vino maspek." How do we know what's evidence, what's not evidence? Maybe, like David was saying, maybe other things as well. The Gemara focuses on something that's written in the Torah, and only things that are written in the Torah. There has to be something unique about that. El tama nachon. Here's the reason that's why something written in the Torah is mutter. Shatora asram kol minog miyukad v'nimusei avodazara. Here's what's under the rubric of Kukos Akam. Anything that's set aside, it's designated for pagan ritual. Shema yimashech adam acharayim k'mosam. Right. Category number one. Anything that's pagan is going to be aser. If the non-Jews do something, have some type of custom, doesn't have any logical explanation, any logical natural explanation for it. Not something that experience has shown to be positive. So if somebody follows those practices that don't have any logical, rational basis, that's also a violation of Darkei Amori, that's also a violation of Kukos Akam. So, the Sharon seems to be saying as follows. There are two categories of things that fall under Kukos Akam. Number one, things associated with pagan rites. That seems to be across the board. Nobody's agree with that. And number two, things that are illogical, things that don't have any natural explanation, or things that experience hasn't shown to be true. Let's get there in a second, please. Thank you. So those are the two categories of things that fall under Kukos Akam. And he says, that's what the Gemara means, that since it's written in the Torah, therefore it's matur. Presumably what he means is that if something's written in the Torah, it doesn't fall under either of these two categories. It's not something that's pagan, because it's written in the Torah. And also, it's not something that's illogical, rational, and arbitrary. Again, because the Torah wouldn't tell you that Jews do things that are illogical, arbitrary, and irrational. So the way he's reading the Gemara is, Kiven Deksiv D'Oraisa, since it's written in the Torah, therefore, perforce, doesn't fall under the category of things that are Aser. I mean, the way Tosfos read the Gemara, according to the first Rishon we saw, since it's written in the Torah, therefore, we got it from ourselves, we didn't take it from them. But really, anything that we take from them is going to be Aser. According to the way the Rambam is reading the Gemara, the question isn't a question of sources. The question is a question of the nature of the action. Because it's written in the Torah, therefore it's not pagan, it's not arbitrary, and therefore it's going to be mutter. So take from what the Rambam says, and then go back to the Gemara and Avodah Zarah. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, the reason why it's mutter to burn things for kings is because it's not a chok, it's mishum chashivusa. It's something that shows importance, shows honor to the king. So our initial problem was that the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says it's mutter to burn things because it shows honor to the king. The Gemara of Sanhedrin says it's mutter to burn things because it's written in the Torah. They're saying two different things. So why do we have two reasons with different applications for this, to justify the same practice? So Tosfos said, two Gemaras, they're dealing with the issue on two different levels. It's first, we have to establish it's not Avodah Zarah oriented, then we have to establish even if it's not Avodah Zarah oriented, it's still going to be mutter. according to the Ran, the two Gemaras are saying exactly the same thing. Since it's written in the Torah, therefore it's not something that's pagan, it's not something that's arbitrary. Gemara Avodah Zarah is saying there's a logical reason for it. They do a Mishum Hashivusa, they do it to show honor to their king. So at the end of the day, both Gemaras are saying the same exact thing in different words. The reason why it's not Kukos Hakom is because there's a good reason for it. It's not arbitrary, it's not pagan. It's Mishum Hashivusa. It's written in the Torah. The Torah wouldn't lead us to do something that's arbitrary or irrational. So just to summarize what we've seen and put things together. So what we have are two Gemaras and seemingly two different ways to put the two Gemaras together. According to the Ran, what the Gemaras are telling us are that we should be limiting your scope of what falls under Chukos Hakam. The only things that fall under Chukos Hakam are things that are Avodah Zarah or irrational. Things that are written in the Torah or things that are Mishum Chashivusa are neither of those things, and therefore it's going to be Mutter. So anything that's not irrational is going to be Mutter. According to Tosfos, the two Gemaras are dealing with two different issues. First, you have to establish that it's not a Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah is always going to be Aser. Even if it's not a Avodah Zarah, it should be Aser. Presumably, everything should be Aser. Unless you find a Pasuk telling you that the Jews did it from time immemorial, in which case we could assume that we got it from our own sources and not from them. And these two ways of reading the Gemara will give you two majorly different scopes of Kukos Hakam. Let's say anything the non-Jews do that's not pagan, but not irrational. So according to Tosfos, it's going to be Aser, unless you find some type of Pasuk. According to the Ran, it's going to be Mutter, because the Ister is only for Avodah Zarah and things that are irrational. So thank you. And next week, I guess we'll see maybe another Rishon or two, and we'll start moving towards the Tor and Shulchan Aruch and see how the Sugya develops.